Welcome everyone to the Middle East Forum conference call. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow with the Forum, and I'll be your chair. Today our speaker is the Forum's own Stephen J. Rosen. Steve's the director of the Forum's Washington Project and former foreign policy director of AIPAC. Steve will be offering his assessment of Israel's Operation Pillar of Defense in Gaza, as well as covering the rapid shifts in events in the region that affect Israel. Recently, Steve, along with Daniel Pipes, met with Israeli officials to discuss strategy and policy, and Steve will be briefing us on the conclusions reached in those meetings. Steve?
Thank you, Marilyn, and hello, everyone. Thanks for being with us. As Marilyn mentioned, Daniel Pipes and I are just back from Israel, where we met with the foreign minister, Mr. Lieberman, just before he resigned, with the National Security Advisor, Yaakov Amidror, with the political advisor to the Prime Minister, Ron Dermer, and many other key officials. And it was right after the Pillar of Defense operation in Gaza, and also at the height of the developments at the United Nations. So we got some insights that I'd like to share with you. One is that Israel finds itself in the paradoxical, surprising position of, to some degree, depending on Hamas in Gaza and looking to Hamas to be a strong central authority that can be held accountable for violent operations of its own and also of the other groups that operate there, some of which are Salafi groups that are even more radical than Hamas. And it's a long-standing principle of Israel's national security doctrine that Israel is better off when there's a strong central authority in its neighboring states and areas that can be held accountable. And today, that means, at least for now, Hamas. The government was surprised and impressed by how quickly Hamas was able to establish complete quiet after a ceasefire agreement was struck. It only took 60 minutes, whereas in past conflicts, the so-called tail of the violence was a day or two or sometimes even longer. Here it was just minutes, and then there was complete calm and has been pretty much since, which proves that they can be held accountable and that Israel has, to some degree, restored its deterrent. The problem is that Hamas is now engaged in obvious effort to rearm on a large scale and prepare for a future round. Israel has two ways to prevent the rearmament. For the moment, they are in the, again, paradoxical position of depending on Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt, to help prevent smuggling into Gaza, because Egypt controls the Sinai, and the arms enter, the great bulk of them, through Sinai, and they are potentially easy to find, but the Egyptians have to want to do it. Paradoxically, the Israelis think they might have a better chance to get real cooperation to stop smuggling from Morsi and the and his Islamist government than they did from Mubarak. Mubarak very much hated Hamas and wanted Israel to destroy it in Gaza. But he sometimes turned a blind eye to the smuggling because if there were to be a round of fighting between Israel and Hamas, the Israelis might actually weaken or even eliminate Hamas in Gaza, which would serve his interests. And he was able to turn a blind eye to Israeli operations in Gaza. The problem is that the Hamas organization is the child of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. So Morsi cannot turn a blind eye to an Israeli operation against Hamas. And if there would be a resumption of fighting, and especially if the IDF had to go into Gaza, it would be very difficult for Egypt to stay out of that fight. And if Egypt went in, it would effectively be repudiating the peace treaty. And in that case, Egypt would no longer get bilateral and multilateral help from the United States. The United States is important not only for the $1.5 billion roughly that it gives to Egypt directly, but also for the larger amounts that come from the IMF and the international and the World Bank, which are heavily under United States influence. So a war between Israel and Hamas, drawing Egypt in, could hurt Morsi's plan to try to revive the Egyptian economy, which is in a very bad condition. And so paradoxically, for this reason, there is the possibility that Morsi will work harder to stop the smuggling into Gaza, which would lead to that next round of fighting, than Mubarak did. There's also another surprising finding in Israel is a much higher level of confidence in the United States and the Obama administration than we had for some time. Obama was completely supportive, not only in public, but even more so, we were told, in private during this operation. He told the Israelis that not only did Hamas start the fight and not only did Israel have a right to defend itself, but Israel had a right to choose the tactics that it required to defend itself. And they thought they had some pretty good moments with President Obama, which has not always, as you know very well, been the case. So those were some of the conclusions about Egypt and Hamas and the Obama administration's role in it. The other big issue at the time we were there was the United Nations vote, which raises three different problems. One is it's an effort by the Palestinians, instead of negotiating with Israel, to go to the UN, is an obvious effort to get the great powers to impose terms on Israel instead of bilateral negotiation. And that's a matter of concern. It takes us back to the pre-Oslo days. The second problem is that the resolution codified the 1967 borders as the basis for negotiations, and that will tie the PA's own hands in a future negotiation and make realistic, flexible bargaining less likely. So it actually hurts a potential future peace process. But the most serious aspect of the vote was that it puts the PA in a position to be recognized as a state and thereby become eligible to bring cases against Israel in the International Criminal Court. The International Criminal Court is exactly that, a criminal court. And it is a place where an effort could be made to stamp all of Israel's leaders and its top generals and even people further down the food chain as so-called war criminals. All manner of things are described as war crimes at the International Criminal Court. And the composition of the court does not give Israel confidence. It's mostly, most of the judges come from so-called non-aligned countries that routinely vote against Israel in the General Assembly. And it's a potentially very hostile place for Israel. There are two kinds of cases that could be brought against Israel in the ICC. One kind is about the use of force, and the other kind is about settlements. Israel is actually less worried about use of force cases for a number of reasons. One is the principle of proportionality. Because Israel is exercising its legitimate right of self-defense and its acts are proportional to military necessities, it has a degree of protection from that alone. The second reason it's not too worried about use of force cases is what's called complementarity. The court statute says the ICC is intended to be complementary to national criminal jurisdictions, such as Israel's jurisdiction, rather than a replacement for them. And because Israel has the most independent judiciary in the whole Middle East, it has a credible case that that there's no need for the ICC to intervene, that its own courts restrict. And the third reason that use of force cases is less likely is the possibility of counter cases, meaning cases against the PA and especially against Hamas, who do all kinds of things that are described as war crimes under the ICC statute, including taking of hostages, deliberately targeting civilians, and things like that. So I don't say they're unworried about use of force cases, but they are more worried about settlement cases, about an effort to stamp all of the Jewish communities outside the Green Line as criminal acts, and that the people who established them were guilty of war crimes for establishing them. And I won't go into the whole legal reasoning here. It's a complex subject that would take us too much time, and we want to have room for Q&A. But the basic point is that the criminal court is likely to declare that the Fourth Geneva Convention applies to the territories, because the territories, they will declare in all likelihood, are occupied rather than, as Israel argues, disputed. This goes back to the question of whether there was a sovereign owner before 1949. And if that ruling is made, it may be possible to begin to delegitimize Israel and take this campaign to isolate Israel much further by using the tools of the International Criminal Court and declaring all of Israel's leaders to be criminals. That could even go back to leaders like Golda Meir and Yitzhak Rabin and Shimon Peres, all of whom helped to build Jewish communities in the eastern sector of Jerusalem, which would be declared war crimes. Communities that have 40% of the Jewish citizens of Jerusalem live in these communities. Communities like Ramat and Ramat Shlomo and Pisgat Zev and East Talpiot and Gilo. These are, many of them, 40 years old. They were established by the Labor Party. But here they would be not just illegal, but a war crime. And those who put them there would be, according to this reasoning, war criminals. The United States has a self-interest to prevent the issues like this from being taken to the ICC, because the ICC would be in the position of exercising jurisdiction over nationals of non-party states, that is, states that have not signed the ICC convention and are not parties to the ICC. The United States, like Israel, has not signed it, and there has long been a concern in the United States that this a criminal court could be used against American soldiers operating in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and other countries, and also against acts like the use of predators to strike targets where there are sometimes civilian deaths and things of this kind. So because of the concern of the United States with protecting itself and its own officials, and especially members of the armed forces, from abuse by the ICC, from being stamped as war criminals, the United States has an incentive to stand with Israel on the procedural issues. Even if there's a substantive difference about settlements, the United States is not going to want the issue taken to the ICC. Unfortunately, the Obama administration has been softening U.S. opposition to the authority of the ICC, and the United States has reset its relationship, as one official put it, from hostility to positive engagement. And there is an evolution taking place in American policy toward the ICC. So, unfortunately, Israel faces not just an enhanced military threat from Gaza and also, I might add, from Sinai, but an enhanced political threat of the criminalization of Israel's policies and its leaders at the International Criminal Court. Well, I think in the interest of time, I'll stop there.